The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
Good morning, I'm Joyce Goh and you're listening to The Breakfast Grill. We have with us today, Sean DiGregorio, founder and CEO of Frontier Digital Ventures. Frontier is focused on investing in online classified businesses that are in underdeveloped and emerging countries. Listed on the Australian Stock Exchange, the company is operating in 17 markets. Sean, welcome to the show.
Morning, how are you?
Good, thanks. How are you?
Very well.
Well, let's start with an overview of what Digital Frontier is about. Share with us this business that you and your team are building in the digital realm where the pace is intense and are challenging at the same time.
Sure. So what we do is we invest in online classifieds businesses, which most Malaysians would be familiar with, iProperty, for example, or CarList, so online property portals and online automotive portals. We invest in those types of businesses, as you say, in frontier and emerging markets. So that means regions like South Asia, places like Myanmar, Sri Lanka, we're in Vietnam, Philippines, Central and South America. So we've invested in Central American business and a number of South American countries and a number of African markets as well. So I guess markets that are less developed, but where that same business model, that online classifieds business model, which has worked so well in places like Malaysia and in developed countries, is starting to emerge and be a really interesting business in those frontier markets. So that's what we do. And as you say, we're scattered all around the world in about 15 countries. So it keeps us busy.
Yeah, the company's revenue is up year on year, but you have a net loss for FY 2016 that widened nearly 100% to 4.6 million Aussie dollars. So what is your path to profitability looking like?
Yes, our business is unique in that the best way to think about us is like an operating VC. So we invest in individual businesses. And when you invest in that many businesses that are early stage in that many markets, you know, the sum of the parts is they're all loss-making. But over the next couple of years, and certainly in 2018, we expect a number of those businesses to become profitable. And as one becomes profitable, obviously our sum of the parts loss decreases, and over time we want them all to be profitable. So it's an interesting business model. It's not something that's been done a lot of, and it's going to take some time. We know that. It's probably a 3 to 5 year journey that we're on in getting these individual businesses to profitability. And when you add them all up at the end of the day, that'll mean that our holding company, which is Frontier, will become profitable as well.
So in 3 to 5 years, you think Frontier will be profitable?
We do. So we've got 15 partners today. We expect at least 3 to 4 of those to be profitable this year. And over the next couple of years, the rest to follow suit. So we know that investing in these businesses, it's a long-term game, albeit that 3 to 5 years is not a long time in the context of some more traditional businesses. But we know that once they get the formula right, we know the business model very well. And if you get the right entrepreneurs running the business, you can certainly grow them very rapidly. And we've seen some of the businesses that we've invested in very early in the piece now starting to be quite sizable of themselves. So, you know, touch wood, so far so good.
So when those few markets turn profitable this year, do you think it's enough to bring the holding company to see black ink?
No, is the short answer. We're probably a couple of years away from that. But, you know, our at a group level, our revenues grew last quarter, so at 80%. To the previous corresponding period, and we'll announce our full year results in the next few weeks, which will show again really strong growth on a revenue level, and our costs are moderating. So as I said, I think we get 3 or 4 businesses to profitability this year, 3 or 4 next year, and then hopefully the sum of the parts will hit profitability at a group level sometime after that. Although the only caveat is, we continue to look for new businesses to invest in. So if we add more businesses, then that story changes slightly. But the best way to think about it is just those individual businesses getting there.
So earlier you mentioned revenue has expanded quite a bit and your cost has shrunk, right? Does that mean that your net loss has narrowed for FY 2017?
No, again, I said our costs have moderated. So
yeah.
The goal in this game is to grow revenue as quickly as possible. And you do that in an individual business when you have clear market leadership. And if you look at some of the data for our investees, you'll see that some of them, where they're clear market leaders, are growing revenue quite rapidly. The costs grow at a slower rate, but because they're loss-making, it takes a while for those two lines to join. So as I said, it's probably a 2 to 3 year sort of journey that we're on. And, you know, over a 5 year period, I think a business like ours has tremendous potential.
So will your loss be smaller than FY 2016?
You'll have to wait for the results. I can't tell you ahead of the market. So those results will be released by the end of this month. We'll give the market an update. We release quarterly results, and then our full year comes a few weeks after that. So I'd get in trouble if I gave you any more information, Joyce, that would lead you to a conclusion.
Okay, one of Frontier's substantial shareholder, the Catcher Group, did sell online classifieds iProperty for a cool, what, AUD $751 million, right?
That's right.
So this was back in 2015. And there's talk that Frontier has an aim for an eventual acquisition. What's the game plan here and when do you see that happening?
Interesting. iProperty was profitable, I should note. So they had a couple of really great businesses in that portfolio, and as you say, they were acquired for around $750 million Aussie dollars. So at Frontier, you know, we don't sit around planning for that day. We just have a belief that if you run your business really well, over the journey, over that sort of 3 to 5 year period, you know, the opportunity to monetize some of our assets will come to us. And if someone, Joyce, at some point wants to come along in the future and try and buy Frontier, then that's something we can't control. But we just focus on running the business. And I think when you do that, those sorts of options tend to look after themselves. And certainly iProperty, you know, I was CEO of that business for 4.5 years. Our focus was just on running the business really well. And the outcome of that was that someone decided that they liked it a lot and acquired it. So it's probably how we think about the world.
Earlier you mentioned about new businesses. Do you have any in mind or in your radar?
We do. We always do. So we have a small team whose job it is to hunt for new opportunities. So they sit here in KL. We're all based in KL. And they look at markets in South Asia, in Central South America, parts of Africa, parts of the Middle East. And we look for, you know, local entrepreneurs who are running an early stage online classifieds business, who tend to have been running it for a while. They've put a few years of their own effort and time and often money into the business. And we love finding those entrepreneurs and seeing if the chemistry's right and if the fit is right. And what we offer is help, basically. So if you're an entrepreneur in one of these markets, it can be a very difficult experience. It can be a bit lonely. There's not a big ecosystem around you. So once you get your business up and running, you're often looking for a partner, for an investor. And Frontier is unique in that sense. So we're always looking at new opportunities. In fact, just yesterday we sat down and looked at another 3 or 4 new opportunities that are out there. And I guess it's almost endless. You know, you think the opportunities are going to dry up, but along comes a whole new bunch. So there's a lot of really ambitious entrepreneurs out there that continue to start these businesses. And it's really interesting to have a read of that in the sort of markets we look at.
So which markets are they on, which regions? And do you think that an acquisition might happen this year? Because you're sitting on... you're in net cash position, 16.3 million Aussie dollars right now, right? As September 30th, 2017, right? So what do you plan to do with this cash? Anyone that caught your eye?
Well, two things. I mean, we like to have enough money to fund our current partners as they grow. Mm-hmm. But also, as you say, we look at new opportunities. The regions that have been really good for us, if you look at our portfolio, is a lot of the Asian investments we've made in the Asian region have been good. Central and South America have also been very good. And Africa, we view as a much longer term play in Africa. So we are definitely on the lookout and always in conversations with different people. And we would expect this year to hopefully add to our portfolio of investees. I'm not trying to be cryptic or avoid a more direct response, but as you'd appreciate, a lot of those conversations are sort of commercially sensitive as well.
Because recently you acquired 3 online property portals in Africa and you exited 1 classified horizontal platform there. So are you looking at any other investments there as well? It looks like you like that market.
Well, what we do like is the online property classifieds businesses, and we like the online auto businesses. And we had an opportunity in Africa to do a deal with a Rocket subsidiary called Jumia. They had a number of property portals in markets that we were operating in. They really liked one of the businesses we had, which you mentioned, which was a business called Afribarber. It operated like a Muda in 3 or 4 French-speaking countries in Africa. Mm. And we did a swap. So they like what we had. We kind of like what they had. So we did a swap, which was very neat. It was a good outcome for us, good outcome for them, and it sharpened our focus on some specific geographies. And we exited a business quite successfully to make that deal happen as well. So, so we continue to look for those opportunities as well. So it won't always be us announcing simply buying new businesses or investing in new businesses. We're always on the lookout for deals that we think can give us a better outcome, and that was probably a good example of one.
Do you think you'll be doing any more swaps this year? Perhaps plan an exit in markets that you're in and something that you see that you like in a region?
Yeah, we are always open to those sorts of opportunities. So if anyone's listening and they have a good swap deal for us.
Maybe you can share which regions that you're looking at markets.
Well, I mean, I think Africa is a long-term play, is one geography where you've got to be probably the clear number one. It's very difficult in a lot of those markets to be a number two. And that was the rationale behind the asset swap that we did with Jumia, where, you know, they're now number one in a market. We're number one in the other markets. To be number two in early stage markets is really tough. So if there's opportunities for us to trade our way out of those positions into a better position, absolutely. And that's what we do. So we're always on the lookout.
How about exits?
Well, I mean, we've made two exits just recently out of two small businesses that we'd invested in, we'd put a lot of time into, and we just realised that the path to profitability probably wasn't there. So we exited, and in a couple of those instances, we sold the business back to its founders, and it just allows us to focus on the businesses that we think we can influence a bit more and can be long-term profitable and bigger businesses.
Is there a cutoff time for investments if they're not panning out as you plan? Then do you set a specific cutoff time?
We're probably not that arbitrary in saying it's got to be 2 years or it's got to be 3 years. I mean, the first business that we invested in is now it's actually been around for 10 years, and it's creeping toward profitability, but it's been such a good business that the revenues have grown so fast that we've been very patient. Whereas some smaller businesses, we might say, you know what, after a year or so, you get a sense of whether that business is going to get there and whether the chemistry is right and whether the fit is right. And if the answer is no, then you should just go focus on the ones that you think are going to get there.
But at the end of the day, it's still about sustainability, right? A business has to be sustainable. So
Absolutely.
How long would you give it until, you know, it becomes sustainable or not, cut your losses?
Well, the question is, do you believe it's going to succeed? Is it a market that, if it succeeds, is going to be materially, you know, valuable? And if the answer is yes, you'd be a bit more patient. If it's a great entrepreneur, they're really focused, they're growing the business, then the answer is you keep investing in them. If for some reason those factors change, you say, well, you know what, limited resources, we're in a lot of different places, we want to focus on the businesses that have those characteristics really strong and invest in those ones.
I'm speaking to Sean DiGregorio, founder and CEO of Frontier Digital Ventures. After this, we'll talk more about Frontier strategies in the markets it is in. Stay tuned to The Morning Run, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
Good morning. You're listening to The Breakfast Grill, and my guest today is Sean DiGregorio, founder and CEO of Frontier Digital Ventures. Sean, Frontier has investments in businesses that are in the early stages of development. So these are early stage businesses that may not have well-developed business strategies in place or strong customer and supplier relationships. So how challenging is it to grow them?
Look, it is challenging. It's not a complicated business model that we invest in. So online advertising, it's been around for quite a long time, back to the mid-90s. It's well-practiced. It's highly developed in many markets. And what we find is that the complexity or the challenge is not necessarily the business model per se. It's more the operating environment. So when you take a fairly simple business model and you put it into a challenging environment, it's probably the environmental factors that make it more difficult, whether that's transportation or infrastructure or the electricity staying on, or you know, people having access to reliable internet connections, or as you say, being able to get to your customers easily and talk to them readily. It's probably those environmental factors that make it more difficult than just the business model itself. Advertising's pretty straightforward, but it is sometimes a bit challenging when you're faced with those factors.
So what's your business strategy there?
Well, you know, the premise of our business is we get local entrepreneurs to run it. So historically in online classifieds, we might have gone into a country we liked and bought 100% of the business and then put our own C-level exec to run it. and it never really went that well in the past. So our strategy is to say, well, we don't know how to operate in Pakistan. In fact, we don't know a lot about Pakistan. So our strategy is to find local entrepreneurs who run the business. They know the local environment. They're very well connected. They can navigate all of those things that to us might look challenging, but to them is, you know, normal daily life. So we invest primarily in the local entrepreneurs, and we invest in their ability to run the business and get around those things that we might find difficult, rather than think that, gee, we're so smart, we can just go in there and, you know, we know everything and fail. So a good way to get around those local factors is to have local people, local help, helping you on the ground.
That strategy seems to have worked for your FY first half 2017, because it looks like your EBITDA loss contracted 16% to 6.5 million Aussie dollars because of the strategy where you work with local entrepreneurs, right? So, but how do you trust them though? Do you have any like lessons learned from characters that, you know, that you cannot trust?
Yeah, it's a really good question, and it probably goes to the heart of what we do is if you understand a market and you like a market, fantastic. You then go in and you understand the business and you know the business. It's not wholly complicated. The biggest thing is the right entrepreneur, the fit, the trust, getting to know them. And we spend a lot of time. If you think about the due diligence you would do when you're investing in a new business, a lot of our DD is just meeting the local entrepreneurs and the local team, spending time with them. I mean, I found myself in some very unique situations, meeting their extended families, being invited around for dinners and meeting grandparents and nieces and nephews and all sorts of things like that, which is really fascinating. It's been a really remarkable journey. You know, you wouldn't have expected those things to happen, but it just goes to spending time with them, getting to know their partners. I've spent time with kids and a whole lot of things, getting tours of their local countries and stuff like that. So, yeah, it is trust. We haven't had any... You know, touch wood, we haven't had any bad experiences. And keep in mind, these entrepreneurs are pretty smart guys and people generally. They've started businesses in difficult situations. They've grown the business. They've made it into something. So these are really capable people. And as we said earlier, often in environments that are a little bit difficult than we're used to. So when you see someone or you meet someone who's done that, I admire that. And getting to know them is always fascinating, and I guess that's as much as we can do to try and overcome that.
Well, in the markets that you are in, granted, there's potential with the digitalization of ads and growing internet smartphone penetration. But are you able to monetize this shift to online ads? Because from the 13 platforms that you are in, they are all still in negative EBITDAs for first half 2017.
Yeah, it's a really good point. So, in very developed markets, you have very deep advertising pools of money to migrate to online. You know, a lot of print went straight to online. In emerging markets, that was also the case. In a lot of the markets we're in, there's not a massive existing advertising pool of spend to shift to online. So what tends to happen is that you shift a bit of that ad to the internet, but then more and more in our markets that we invest in, what you end up becoming is more involved in the transaction. So for example, in property, in a lot of these markets we invest in, the property portal not only gets advertising dollars from property developers and property agents, but they play a more active role in helping the buyer connect with the seller and often earn a commission or get their revenue from that transaction. So in places like Myanmar, in Pakistan, Sri Lanka, it's being trialed. In a lot of the African markets, the property portal is actually playing a much bigger role than just advertising. So you go on, you search for a house, you get put in contact with the seller, and the property portal will go the whole way with you, right through to the transaction, and often earn an increasing amount of their revenue from the transaction. So you're right, the ad pool is not as deep, so they find more innovative ways to monetize what is basically someone looking for a property and a seller of a property and how they can make that transaction happen and earn revenue from that.
Okay, so you're in property, automotive, general classifieds as well. So what happens when these segments face structural headwinds? Do you, like, what are you doing to mitigate this risk?
Well, I mean, structural headwinds, we can't control those things, whether that might be politics, local politics, it might be the economy, it might be the price of oil in a lot of these markets. There are a lot of macro factors that influence the property market, for example, credit, you know, the banking system. So we just find that if you take a long-term view, a lot of those factors are moments in time. And if you stay the course, you've got faith in the market, faith in the entrepreneur. And keep in mind that these markets are growing rapidly. So they're not growing at 2 or 3%. The GDPs are growing at, 6, 7, 8, 9%. So it's still that overwhelming economic growth tends to overcome those instances where there might be, a little bit of a nervous 6 months. But if you go the distance, generally, it'll work out.
Do you have any diversification plans? Because there's one platform, Enchetra24.com, that's a bulk of your revenue.
Yes, and that's the Spanish portal. So we go with E24. It's much easier.
E24, yeah, okay.
So these guys operate in Central America, and that's like a mutter. That's a general classifieds. And they're across four markets. So that's probably a unique business. In we were looking a lot at South America for opportunities, and this was a number of years ago when things in South America perhaps weren't so good. And we kept looking and kept looking, and we found basically between Mexico and Colombia, the Central American markets, and a business there, E24, which is run really well by a husband and wife team. They do a great job. And it's one of our biggest businesses. So it's probably one of those unique instances where we kept looking, we found some great entrepreneurs running a business in some markets that were underserviced, very low competition, and they do a great job. So it's also a great place to visit too. So,
do you have any diversification plans though, like for segments or industries?
Not so much. I mean, we're fairly diversified geographically. So we're across three key geographies being sort of South, Southeast Asia, Central South America and parts of Africa. So we have a fair geographic diversification already. We do like property portals, online advertising of property primarily, and we do like online advertising of auto. We're unlikely to stray outside of those two, but I think if there was a diversification, it would be that the traditional model, which is online advertising, becoming more and more toward the transaction. So the property portal and the auto portal becoming more and more involved in you buying or selling your house or buying or selling your car, not just the ad dollar.
What is what changes do you foresee happening at the tech front? Given the low barriers of entry to the industry that you're in, how do you stay ahead of the tech curve?
Yeah, it's interesting. In our industry, in each market, there is a clear number one, and it's very, very difficult to make money if you're number two or you're number three. But people keep trying. People keep entering the markets, even in markets where it's really well established. New entrants continue to come into the market, and often because the barrier to entry, the cost of technology, the access to technology is forever becoming less. So for us, we keep an eye on that, and I don't think that's going to stop. So we just sort of live with it. But if you want to be number one in these markets, and tech gets easier, tech gets cheaper, but it doesn't mean that the market structure becomes easier. And we see a lot of people come into the market, they last 6 or 9 months, and then they disappear. So it's a tough ride sometimes.
Well, the industry is, there's been M&A activities there, right? So Telenor acquired some of its JV partner stakes for online classified platforms here in this region. Are you looking at taking part in any M&A exercises for the group or your investee companies, given that you're also linked to Catcher Group? Any plans to merge with the other businesses there under the group's umbrella?
No plans to merge with any other Catcher-based businesses. We operate quite independently. I think what's also happening, though, is that large companies like Telenor and others, Tencent from China, and a number of media companies from more developed or larger markets continue to look for new opportunities. So there's always going to be a lot of M&A in this space because it's such a fast-growing space, and we know that it's a lot about the future and large companies trying to get their hands on growth opportunities. So we're very aware of that, but we have no M&A/corp dev plans for Frontier as we sit here today. We're just focused on the investments we have and growing those.
How about for your investee companies?
Oh, we're always looking. So if in one of our markets there's an opportunity to consolidate or buy a competitor, for example, we're always on the lookout for those opportunities. So we're very, very attuned to that sort of thing.
Are you in talks for any?
Are we in talks? We're always in talks about
doing stuff.
So it's a very fluid situation, as you know. It's fast growing, it's changing quickly, and everyone wants to try and build market leadership. So where there's opportunities to do that, we're always chatting and we're always open to chatting.
But definitely you think in 2018 something will happen?
I'd be surprised if we sat here in a year, Joyce, and nothing had happened.
I've been speaking to Sean Di Gregorio. Sean, thank you for being on The Breakfast Grill today. It was a pleasure having you. I'm Joyce Goh for BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
That episode of BFM Breakfast Grill was brought to you by U-Mobile, where data hearts you.